Next case is 07306, Treta Rankin versus CCDCFS et al.
Malamed, thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Sean Malamed. I'm an assistant prosecuting attorney from Cuyahoga County. I hereby respectfully request, Chief Justice, 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
The appellants are asking this court to correct the erroneous legal analysis that the Court of Appeals made in its decision to overturn the trial court's summary judgment order. On behalf of the Cuyahoga County Department of Children and Family Services, or CFS, if I may, its director, James McCafferty, and social worker, Gina Zazara. The appellants respectfully submit that the Court of Appeals did not correctly apply the law. And we're asking this court to do two things, to hold that a political subdivision is immune from liability pursuant to revised code chapter 2744, for the undertaking of a court-ordered supervised visitation of a child. In that regard, we're asking the court to find that the special relationship exception to Ohio's public duty rule does not supersede the statutory framework for determining whether an Ohio political subdivision is liable under 2744. The second thing we ask the court to do is to hold that the employees of political subdivisions do not act recklessly when their conduct was not directly related to the harm of a child involved in a supervised visitation. Your Honors, the special relationship exception to the public duty rule is not an independent, separate source of liability against a political subdivision, in addition to the framework of 2744. Tort liability in this state is governed by that statute, and this court in Cater versus Cleveland set forth three-tier analysis with respect to that statute. The analysis begins, of course, with the proposition that political subdivisions are immune. The second step of the analysis is looking at B1 through 5 as to whether any of the exceptions in that section apply that would remove the immunity from the political subdivision. If, in fact, a party is successful in establishing one of those exceptions, then the subdivision can move to the third and final step to see whether or not under 03 immunity can be reinstated. In this case, CFS was engaged in the governmental function of operating a public children's services agency. The operation of CFS constituted governmental function. I don't think there's any question that is the correct finding under the statute. And because the appellees sought to recover damages from a political subdivision arising out of the operation of a governmental function, the next step in the analysis was whether any of the five exceptions in B1 through 5 applied. None of those exceptions apply, Your Honor, to the facts of this case. The Court of Appeals analysis relative to the agency's liability should have stopped at that point. Under the plain and unambiguous language of 2744, and this court's instructions in Cater, the Court of Appeals erred by finding as a matter of law that CFS was not immune from liability because of the special relationship exception to the public duty doctrine. The Court of Appeals, in doing that, committed a fundamental error. The special relationship exception to the public duty rule does not supersede or otherwise subject Ohio political subdivisions to tort liability. The language in the framework is plain and unambiguous. It does not stand alone as a separate common law cause of action.
Mr. Malamed, let's assume that we decide that the special relationship or special duty doctrine is alive in this case. What is your strongest argument that would convince us that the agency here, through its employees who were monitoring the conduct of their employee with the father and the child, that there was not a special relationship here. Why was this not a special relationship?
Your Honor, with respect to the entity, again, I hope I answer your question correctly. The public duty rule is there as a defense for an entity, for a political subdivision, when a claim in negligence is permitted under 2744. And the entity thereafter can assert as a defense of public duty rule to assert that the duty, in fact, does not exist. In response to that, a plaintiff can can attempt to demonstrate that there is a special relationship exception to that public duty rule to put in, back in place the duty. And that's the only purpose of the response is to establish that there was, in fact, a duty. This young child was ordered by the court to have supervised visitations at the agency. I'm not sure that there's anything special about that, Your Honor, that would create...
Well, it's a one-on-one relationship, or at least it turned out to be a one-on-one relationship, where the father was permitted to have visitation, I guess, with his daughter, but was advised that, I mean, that the agency was, as I understood from the briefs, the agency was required to keep him under surveillance at all times, and he permits the father and the daughter to go into the men's restroom and then to let and come out, where there was one inappropriate contact, and then they come out and there's another one with her sitting on the chair. That's a little different than saying the fire department didn't get to my house on time and I lost part of my house as a result of that, is it not?
Your Honor, if I can just address the facts that the court spoke of. As I understand what happened in this case, CFS has a visitation room. It is a separate room that's monitored by a social worker whose job is to watch the visitations. There are tables and chairs for parents and children to come there and to visit one another. In this case, Mr. Martin got up from his chair and took his little girl into a men's room. He was immediately followed by the social worker, who contacted her supervisor, who then came down and ordered him out of the restroom. That supervisor thereafter oversaw the visitation herself. At that time is when the sexual misconduct occurred, while he was being supervised by a different social worker supervisor. Judge, 2744 is plain language. I mean, as egregious as the facts may be, there isn't an exception under the statute for a special relationship common law avenue of liability against a government entity.
But we've said there isn't Sawicki in other cases, haven't we?
Well, Judge Sawicki was ruled...
or at least we recognized
this. Sawicki was obviously ruled upon when this court had abrogated sovereign immunity, and the case that the appellees cite to, State Auto versus Titanium Metals, was vacated by this court as not being a final appealable order. And furthermore, Judge, in that case, the State Auto case relied on this court's decision in Commerce and Industry versus Toledo, which was also dealt with law prior to the effective date of 2744. So I hope I answered the court's question with respect to that. Judge, even if the public duty rule could be used as a separate cause of action, that common law rule would not supersede the framework of 2744. This court has stated that the court may not apply a judicially created doctrine where a statute cuts against its applicability. The immunity provisions of 2744 are clear, unambiguous, unequivocal, and the exceptions are few and far between. The appellees and the Court of Appeals cited no portion of 2744 that would expressly provide an exception to this immunity for any common law doctrine.
Counselor, could you give me an example when it would apply? What type of special relationship between an individual who is harmed under or in relationship to an action by the public entity or the non-action, the negligence of the public entity? Give me an example of when you or when the law says that that does apply?
Judge, I guess an example I can think of is the supply of water to a community is a proprietary function. A resident could claim that the city was negligent in its supply of water to me. The water isn't of fine quality. The city would thereafter, here's a permissible 2744 action, the city would thereafter, in defense of that claim, assert the public duty doctrine. And thereafter, the plaintiff then would have to establish that there was, in fact, a duty because the city took some affirmative step that the plaintiff relied upon to his or her detriment, and whether that would be a filter system or whatever, but there would be a case where the applicability would be permitted under 2744.
So what you just said is that the reliance by the injured party, and they relied to their detriment, and it was a proprietary duty of the entity, the governmental entity. How does that differ from the responsibility assumed by Children's Services, the reliance on their functioning in a manner that was going to protect that little girl, and their failure to do so? How is that different? I don't understand.
Because, Judge, in the example I gave you, 2744 would permit a negligence action against the entity for the negligent operation of a proprietary function, or the negligent conduct in connection thereto. In this case, the operation of this agency is a governmental function. I mean, the analysis is that clear. Is there an exception under B1 through 5 that would permit a plaintiff to find an exception to that broad immunity? And the answer to that is simply no. I mean, B5 is the closest, Your Honor, that we get, I guess, because it talks about when liability is imposed by statute before the amendment by the legislature. But in this case here, the statute reads and read at the time of this action that civil liability must be expressly imposed by a statute. It's not enough that there is a duty of the entity to perform a certain task like there was in this case.
But isn't that entity statutorily assigned to do that responsibility once the court orders it via statute? There's a whole string of statutes that impose that duty, and that's the very existence for Children's Services, is the protection of children, and it's a statutorily established agency. So,
yes, Your Honor, but there is not, Your Honor, anywhere in the revised code that's been cited by anyone in this case where civil liability is expressly imposed against this subdivision for failing, for violating that obligation.
Counsel, you're saying that there's no separate independent grounds based on special relationship then?
Yes.
You're taking a very limited view of the special relationship doctrine as a reaction to the public duty defense, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. The special relationship exception can only be asserted by a party in response to the defense of a public duty rule, which is asserted in defense to a claim of negligence that is permitted by 2744.
Under 1 through 5, or the exceptions to the immunity, you're saying?
Yes, Judge. If it was a claim under 1 through 5 that would permit it, then if it was based on negligence, then the entity could assert the public duty defense, and then the plaintiff could say, "But you took some affirmative steps, which I relied on to my detriment. There's a special relationship here that I am going to assert that is going to reestablish the duty on your behalf."
So, when we're analyzing these 2744 cases, really the statute, the hurdle has to be reached before we talk about public duty or special relationship. To begin with, you have to first find that there's an exception to the immunity under 1 through 5. If that doesn't exist, you don't even go into the discussion of special duty or public duty or special relationship, in your view.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's why, in our view, Your Honor, the analysis of the Court of Appeals should have stopped after step two. There's immunity. None of the exceptions apply. We need not go further here. The trial court was correct in determining that the entity is immune from liability for acts arising out of the operation of a governmental function. That's simple. Your Honor, I see that I have 40 seconds left. I'd like to save for rebuttal if I could. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Malamud. Mr. Levin.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Joel Levin. I'm here with my colleagues, James Gay and Chris Velasich. We have the honor, and it is an honor, to represent a young child who has no remedy for being sexually molested, assaulted, and raped in a system in the United States that, according to the prosecutor, allows for no remedy. This is not a system that could occur with the Court of Claims. This is not a system that could occur under normal law. And this is one would this is a system where there where the county has run through a court order. It has run through a court order and says that there is no remedy. If the county is to be taken seriously, then even if the county were sitting in front of an open court, in front of this court, and misbehaved, and this court wanted to impose civil contempt, this court would not be able to under 2744. What in fact the law of Ohio is, and it is restricted, and from our briefs and probably from my tone, one could say unhappily restricted, is that counties and cities can get away with the kind of misconduct that one would have thought that, given the rule of law in America, one can't get away with. There was a court order. There was a court order. And this county decided they didn't need to listen to the court order and there would be no consequences. So while we are in this magnificent room, in the dark and dreary rooms that my client lives in, where she is under constant threat of sexual assault as a three-year-old rape victim, her only remedy is the county and a judge. And the judge says, watch that child. And the county says, we don't need to. We don't need to now, and we don't need to next week, and we don't need to ever, because we can do what we want because the rule of law doesn't apply. Now, I think that this court has made pretty clear in Sawicki and in Yates, and I think that a number of court of appeals have taken the cue, the 8th District, the 7th District, the 2nd District, in various cases, that says that we're just not going to go that far. Now, I want to suggest, without going through all the facts, really what I had at the end.
Counsel, but, I just want to go to one of your legal arguments. You've not really made any legal arguments yet. Your legal argument that seems the strongest to me is your special duty. And I want to explore the ramifications of that. In this case, you claim that they had a special duty to protect this gal, one, because of a court order, and two, because of their obligation as the Children's Services Agency. If you have a caseworker that has a caseload of 40 families that she is responsible for to go and visit and to watch because the children are suspected of abuse, and if one of those children is injured under her watch, do you believe that your version of the special duty doctrine should extend to each of those relationships?
I believe that, given the shortage of sort of facts, but mm-hmm. in general, that it could be a close call, but it ultimately can be a jury call, Your Honor.
I mean, in part,
what we do is we separate. If somebody is overloaded who has a duty, that overload may well operate as an excuse. And for instance, if there's a private placement agency, or if it's a private school where there is an abusive situation and the principal says, well, there's 1,000 students or someone else, that would be a very good excuse in front of a jury. And that's what we call the rule of law. So I
guess what I'm trying to get a grasp on is what is the extent of your application of a special duty in the setting of a children's services agency? How far does that special duty extend, and what's the parameters of it? Help me understand your version of that.
Well, I will. I would just say that arguing for my particular client and not for general policy, I think when the county runs through a court order, that's the easy case. When there's a specific court order to watch a specific child, then that's the easy case. I do think there needs to be something on a special relationship. But I think the facts determine it. We're a fact determining kind of legal system. And I think this court in Sawicki and then reaffirmed in Yates has put forward, you know, the four-part test. I think the test is a reasonable test. I do think, like a lot of tests, it can be difficult to administer at various times, but that's the nature of whether somebody substantially performed a contract or was reasonable in carrying out a duty of care is always a tough call, Your Honor. But I think that the Sawicki test, assumption of a duty, knowledge of harm, direct contact, and justifiable reliance, I think that's a terrific test. We're not asking for it to be altered at all. We're asking simply that the three appellate courts and this court, which applied in Yates, all post-tort reform, although I went back and looked at 2744, and it has been reformed, I think, 11 times. So post the second-to-last reform, which I think is the applicable one. And the case law is complicated, because every time the legislature speaks, this court speaks.
So you essentially are advocating that a caseworker assigned to a case has now, under the law, a special duty to that person they're assigned. Is that the basis? I understand you apply all those factors to figure out whether that special duty was violated, but what creates that special duty?
I think that's true. I would argue it in general, and I'd argue that in part because of the special protection of children generally, which this court has recognized. I mean, we've got cases, State versus Eastham. There are a number of cases that, with regard to the public policy that this court enunciates, it applies differently in different situations. Young children, as wards of the state, get special protection. We have juvenile courts. We have special agencies. We don't care as much about 25-year-olds as we do about 3-year-olds.
The appellant argues that creates a fifth exception to the exceptions that are in the statute, fifth or sixth, I forget which it is. What is your response to that?
My response is that any statutory scheme in abrogation of the common law should be read restrictively, and that is the rule, the canon of interpretation followed for 200 years here, and I would construe it narrowly, particularly when it violates the sanctity of court orders, and the protection of children who are rape victims, who are molested.
Do I understand then that you're advocating the holding of this case be that the public duty rule creates an independent cause of action for a claimant, independent of 2744 or any of the exceptions that are listed there? Are you going that far?
Yeah, but I wouldn't put the syllabus that way.
Pardon me, please?
Yeah, yes, but I wouldn't put the syllabus that way. I'd put the syllabus that the claim that was always there survives 2744. It's not just terminology, I think, but it's the same. It comes to the same amount, the same thing. There is a cause of action. 2744 doesn't clearly eliminate it. Special duty rule applies, but it is the same. I don't want to quibble on terminology, but I suppose it's my only chance. So I mean, yeah, I agree with you, Justice O'Donnell. I mean,
Counsel, Mr. Levitt,
because. Opposing counsel responded to my question that there is no proprietary duty here that takes him out of the realm of the exception. Mm-hmm. How would you respond to that? Because he answered Justice Lenzinger's question saying that you have to first find, you know, an exception delineated in parts 1 through 5, and if you don't have that, you don't proceed forward. And one of the exceptions is that the negligent performance of acts by employees with respect to the proprietary functions of the political subdivisions.
Well, I don't do the analysis he does. So I'm not, you know. Although I took that part of his answer to Justice Lanzinger was that unless, and it's in the briefs as well, that unless the public duty rule is asserted as a defense, then the special relationship doesn't trump the defense. So the one trumps. Public duty rule trumps negligence, and then special relationship trumps public duty rule. That I take to be the prosecutor's argument, and in answer to the question, I may be missing part of that. I apologize, but I think that's it. Our view is that the statutory scheme basically put in place a generalized public duty rule, and because it's a generalized public duty rule, such that the government is claiming immunity hither and yon, that the special relationship follows that. But I'm not sure. I mean, I'm looking for your puzzle look. I'm meaning to answer your question. I'm not. I would only say that given the statutory schemes and the various interpretations, this is a particularly difficult argument for me to say that I can make consistent every act of every court. Our general view is to narrowly construe a statute that otherwise is an abrogation of public policy, is otherwise against the policy of the state, and otherwise leaves a large class of individuals, particularly children in the system, with no remedy at all. So that is our narrower view. But I think, in response to Justice O'Donnell's question, we are putting forward a might be a sixth exception. You know, my view is not an exception. My view is that the whole territory wasn't captured necessarily by the scheme, particularly as this court wants to see the protection of children and the following of its own orders. I mean, if we have a system where courts issue orders and they're not followed and there's no consequence at all, I mean, have we, you know, and I don't mean to just argue and not argue law, but I mean, I think that this is so fundamental, I mean, that we have to ask, is Marbury versus Madison in existence? Is anything in existence? The court issued an order to the county, do this. The county said, so what? We don't need to obey that. We continually don't need to obey that. And the county said, and we don't have, and there's no consequences. Suppose they had said that in open court to the judge. The heck with you, judge. We're not going to listen to that. Would this court say that's okay? Because I think that is the sum and substance of the argument that is being made here. Let me just address briefly. I think that on the recklessness, which apply to the employees and would apply if ever full discovery were had, and that was addressed in the Court of Appeals decision, perhaps to other employees and to the county, at some point, a conscious disregard of a court order surely comes to recklessness. And I think that we are talking here about dispositive motions. We're not talking about proof and in front of a trier of fact, and we shouldn't change the way we normally look at dispositive motion, which is every inference is drawn in favor of the non-moving party. And based on that, recklessness seems to abound. Whether that could be proven in trial and whether that would be upheld on appeal is a very different matter. But I don't see how a failure to follow a court order by a judge who has relevant jurisdiction can simply be disregarded willy-nilly, and one can say, well, that doesn't matter. The last thing I'd like to just address briefly, and it's sort of implicit in the briefs, and it's certainly as part of the special relationship test. There are a lot of duties that we don't have in Ohio that individuals don't have, but that they assume. And a school doesn't need to put a crossing guard, and children can cross the street. But once they put a crossing guard, and the guard says, cross, and there's a truck that comes and kills that child in a crosswalk, one might think that they have assumed a duty of some kind, and then talk about that. This is an assumed, the special relationship test, the first component is assumption of affirmative duty. That's taking this abused child into their protection. And under assumed duty, under this court, back to the Seeley versus Searle case, and back to a number of cases, it says one who undertakes a voluntary act assumes a duty to complete it with the exercise of due care under the circumstances. This is a 1980s case, early 1980s. This is the law of Ohio forever and a day. What happened here was an assumed duty. Once they took charge of this three-year-old, surely they had a duty to protect her from being raped. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. Mr. Malamud, you've saved a little more than 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, if I can just quickly respond to what the Appellee's counsel stated. The agency did not disregard this order from the court to supervise this visitation. This young girl was assaulted during the visitation when social workers were present. And as to the claim that this, that unless the court sides with appellees, that, that this young girl has no remedy is just simply not true. This 2744 framework permits a plaintiff to sue a government employee, and if the plaintiff can establish that the person acted by conduct that's proscribed by 03, then there's a remedy. What we have here, and it's in our brief, and we didn't get a chance to really argue it, is that the people that the appellees sued were the director of the agency, who had no involvement whatsoever, and a social worker who's the ongoing social worker for the little girl who dropped her off, two social workers whose task it was to supervise the visitation. So I just wanted to respond to that, that there is remedy here if you bring your case the proper way. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.